Hey everyone, today we are kicking off the Origin Story series. This is sort of a tradition here on Zen Founder. This is the third summer in a row that we have brought you some really interesting interviews about where a founder comes from. So we've gotten together with entrepreneurs from a couple of different kinds of businesses and asked them questions about how they got to where they are. So this is not the sort of story of the business. This is a story of the person, the early seeds of entrepreneurship that existed in their lives as children, or the struggles that they worked through on their way to success. These are among my favorite conversations that I get to have in the context of the podcast. And I'm so grateful for the founders that we reached out to who said, yes, I will tell you my story and I will open up about who I am and where I came from. For those of you who are newer listeners to the podcast, these are definitely some old episodes to go back and check out. You can go to our website, click on the podcast tab and search Origin Stories, and you will get a list of the podcasts that we have done over the last couple of summers, attempting to delve deep into how a founder becomes a founder. So thanks for listening to this series this summer. Those of you who are still looking for some summer plans, I am co-leading a digital detox trip to the Boundary Waters, the space between northern Minnesota and Canada. It's a canoe trip for 4 days. I'm co-hosting with Mendel Kirkland from Adventures with Geeks, and we have two more spots. So if you are needing something to do and want to come hang out with some really, really interesting, smart, geeky kinds of folks, we would love to have you along. So feel free to reach out to me directly, sherry@zenfounder.com, or you can fill out the contact form on the website. All right, here we go with Origin Stories.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So just to get started, I think you might be sort of a new name to some of my audience who tend, not exclusively, but tend to be folks who come from the software space, software as a service kind of world. So would you just give us like the like 30-second version of what you do for a job as you understand it?
Okay, 30 seconds times three. So the quick version, quickest as I can, is I've been doing this for 19 years, and I've always built businesses around things I care about. So I'm an immigrant. I came here when I was 14, massive culture shock, went into online games, and my first business was around virtual currency in online games, such as EverQuest or World of Warcraft, which I'm sure a lot of your audience are well aware of. I got into local search around 2003-04, right around when Google Maps came out, because I moved to a new neighborhood and I didn't know what was in that area. Especially being in Canada, we didn't have access to a lot of the stuff that you guys have down in the States. I do just want to note that Amazon.com is the greatest thing that the U.S. has compared to Canada. But moving on, I was in daily deals because there was all these emails coming in, and I did one of those aggregators. I got into nutrition space because I lost a lot of weight, and I realized a lot of supplement companies are ripping us off. And now I talk about entrepreneurship, but I don't do any consulting. I don't do any coaching. It's just something that is of interest to me. So like I said, the common theme is there's always a business always solves a problem, and there's a lot of problems out there. And so the ones that I'm facing, where I'm curious about, I go in and I try to tackle them.
So you basically find problems that are important to you, or problems that you're having, you're experiencing in your life, and then figure out how to build a business around it.
Exactly. I mean, at any given moment in time, you're always frustrated about something, right? This isn't working. This should be better. This should be smoother. Even stuff like podcasts, right? Like, how do we make the audio better? How do we make the recording smoother? That's a problem. And if you can solve it to the scale of that there's other people willing to pay you for the problem, or arguably, I guess, having advertisers, run ads against the audience that has that problem, well, there's a business right there. That's the essence of it. And I've been thankful or lucky enough to realize that a lot of other people are also irritated by the very same things that I am irritated by.
Right. There's camaraderie and irritation.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm always forever, like, I'm just a constant source of irritation personally. So there's like a million possibilities. And thankfully, most of the ones I've chased have been relatively frequent irritants for other people.
So we met at an event in Toronto, I don't know, a couple of months back. And one of the things that I asked you about that instantly made me be like, okay, this guy is really fascinating. I want to know more about him. As I asked you about your name, so your name is Sol Orwell. Would you tell the story of your name?
So I'm ferociously independent. I always tell this to people, you know, you meet the kind of people that are like, hey, I was going to be an entrepreneur from day one. For me, entrepreneurship was about independence. It was never about becoming rich or famous. It was just like, let me do what I want to do whenever I want. And if you want the best example of independence or like kind of choosing whatever you want to do, I think your name kind of fits that bill. So I was not born Sol Orwell by any means. Just for the record, if anyone's curious, George Orwell was actually a pen name. The guy's real name was Eric Blair. With that said, he was actually born in the Indian subcontinent, and so was I, so it's kind of nice little bit of harmony right there. But yeah, about like 8-9 years ago, I decided, hey, I didn't get to choose my name, and that's ridiculous. I want to choose my own name. So I spent the next year just kind of going out, almost split testing first names to see which one I liked the most. So I'd go to a party or event. I'd be like, hi, I'm Jack. Hi, I'm Joe. Hi, I'm Ark. Hi, I'm Hank, whatever. And inevitably, I'd be with usually somebody else. And they'd be like, who are you talking about? That guy's name isn't whatever the name I'm using. People would throw other names at me. And eventually, Sol Orwell fit the best. It felt nice. And I legally changed it. Why not?
How did you come up with Sol?
So Sol actually... The original idea I got was from so I used to play soccer. I was a no-nonsense defender. And when I say no-nonsense, it was like as a defender, I have won two jobs, either kick the ball forward or kick the ball out. That was it. And so on the English national team, there's a guy named Sol Campbell. His full name was Solomon, actually, and he shortened to Sol. And he was kind of the same kind of thing. There was no flash to what he did. It was pure substance. And I always really respected that about him. Just his approach was like, I have a job and I'm going to do it. So that's where I originally got the idea of Sol. But when I tried it out, it was it just felt really nice. Also, because it's kind of weird, right? Like S-O-L is actually short for Solomon, but it's not actually Solomon. It's just S-O-L, which is shit out of luck. It's the beer. It's just kind of, it's obviously the sun in Spanish. Speaking of which, by the way, when I'm in Latin countries, if I say Sol, they get confused because it's short for Soledad, which is a female's name. So I always have to say like, me llamo Saul. So they, otherwise they're like, this makes no sense. You're not a woman. So there's these other little things that come up, but it just fit me well. You know, like it's one of those things, I don't want to sound cliche, but you hear it a few times like, yeah, that sounds about right. And Sol was that for me.
And Orwell, how'd you get there?
Yeah. My grandfather, he was literally born on the streets. He arose to become a Supreme Court judge in Pakistan and in India. Oh, sorry, in Pakistan, sorry. And he'd tell me about this political stuff. I never really understood it. And just a little aside, you know, people talk about George Orwell's 1984 right now. I'd argue that 1984 is more about control, whereas Brave New World was really about there's so much information, we're overwhelmed, which I think is kind of what we're going through today, right? Which is why you watch, say, the Kardashians, because you're like, oh my God, I'm being overwhelmed. But
okay, for the record, I don't watch the Kardashians.
Okay,
you I understand what I'm your saying, premise.
Right? You're just yes. Like, oh my God, there's everything.
Like my brain is, yes. It hurts, so I have to shut it down by something. I have to numb it. I have to, yeah, make it easier on myself. I get it.
Exactly, right? Like, I want to take a break. I don't want to think. But there's a quote in Animal Farm which basically goes, all animals are created equally, except some animals are more equal than others. And that's when I was like, ooh, that's what the world is like. And so Animal Farm was actually really big for me because it kind of made sense of all the politics I'd heard from my grandfather and some of my uncles. And beyond that, if you actually read George Orwell's diaries and his biography, it's a very, very fascinating story. It's a very thoughtful story. And I just found this, that the fact that also it was this pen name, that it's just, there's a level of like beauty to it. Personally, when I say the name Sol Orwell, people think George Orwell. I'm like, no, that's not his real name. So, you know, Freakonomics had that, it was in the book. They also had a podcast episode over this about like the power of names. And just pronouncing Sol Orwell to me, it just fills you with confidence personally. And that's kind of where we got that from.
How did your parents feel about you choosing your name?
So I am the black sheep of my family in both a good and bad way. Just to give you a sense of it, for example, when I got a tattoo, my parents are relatively, they're Muslims, relatively conservative. Tattoos are not the greatest thing in the world. So when I got my tattoo, I told my mom I got a nose ring and a tattoo. And so when I showed up and like I came home and I stuck my arm out, I'm like, Mom, look at my tattoo. And she like slapped my hand away and she's like, let me see your nose. And I was like, psych, no nose ring. Now this doesn't seem so bad. So she called me an idiot and she walked away. So I tell you that because it gives you a sense that my parents are kind of used to me doing shit like this. So when I told them I legally changed my name, I'm pretty sure my mom just shook her head. She called me an idiot and she walked away. So yeah, you know, like there's expectations. The expectations for them were set that I'm going to do something ridiculous. And at that moment in time, it just happened to be by name. With that said, they refused to call me Saul. And now we are currently in a little bit of a battle where my sister just had a kid. So the first next generation, she's like 7 months old. So we're all already arguing over what is this kid going to call me? But, you know, we'll figure that out over time.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like a power struggle about it, but they are not terribly surprised that you would, with your level of independence, like strike out on your own to make your own name.
Yeah, I mean, of all the things I've done, this would be definitely not even maybe top 10 of ridiculous things I've done. So, I mean, my point of view, and this is going to sound almost a little bit bad, but especially as immigrant parents, all they want to do is brag about their kids. And I've given my mom more than enough ammunition that she can brag about me to her friends for the rest of her life. So I feel like this is one of those, like, you take the good with the bad, and my name change and these other idiotic theatrics of mine go towards the bad side right there.
You talk a lot about being an immigrant child and sort of the experience of being displaced from Pakistan, not originally to Canada though, right? Or
No. I went from Pakistan to Saudi Arabia. We spent 2 years in Japan, back to Saudi Arabia. I did eighth grade in Houston, and then we properly immigrated to Canada.
Okay.
Sorry, I can assume what the question was, but I figured you might want to explicitly state it.
So how did that kind of whirlwind of cultures early in your life shape the entrepreneur that you became?
I think more than anything else, it just forced me to see viewpoints from completely different ways. Just to give you an example, right? So I was in Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, basically until the age of 7. And then age of 7, we went to Japan. And everything in Saudi Arabia is halal. And we were, you know, practicing Muslims. And in Japan, suddenly you can't eat sausages or hot dogs because they have pork in them. And that idea was like, it made no sense to me. I'm like, who cares? First of all, I was like, who cares? And I was like, oh, this sucks. So it's just one of those things where you're forced completely outside of whatever bubble you're in. And no matter where you're from, you're in a level of bubble, right? And by that, I don't mean like, yo, you're a street kid in India, you're living easy or anything like that. But there's expectations. There's even the possibilities. Honestly, and this is almost a bit of a little bit of a tangent, but one of the best things of hanging out with like successful people is you see the realm of possibility is usually way beyond what you expected if you did not grow up in that environment. So being exposed to something as different as Japanese culture versus Saudi Arabian culture versus I'm very thankful my parents took us traveling a lot, being exposed to all these different cultures. It just, at the base level, it just lets you see that we're all kind of stupid humans who just want to live a good life and want to have arguably better lives for our kids. But at the same time, it also really lets you appreciate the differences. And there's good and there's bad in all of them. But the idea is obviously you take the good from all of those and kind of ideally end up as a better person.
Were there moments when you felt really like lost and disoriented? I mean, because I know that those kinds of transitions they're not always like, oh, what a great learning opportunity. Like sometimes they can be pretty painful.
Yeah. Oh, it's when you're actually in it, it sucks. I still remember arguing with my parents in Saudi Arabia where we had one elective and I wanted to take woodworking and they made me take French. And there's just this huge argument. They're like, you'll thank me later. And I'm like, who gives about later? Like, I'm worried about right now. So at that moment in time, traveling sucks. I don't have a childhood per se. I don't have any childhood friends. I don't have a childhood home. Like the oldest friends I have are from university because of all the traveling, right? You don't really get to form that bond. My memories are like completely scattered and shot in my brain. So it wasn't easy. Now, in terms of loneliness, I think it depends on how you even perceive community online. So something like Reddit, there was I think it was last month, was, if you guys don't know what an incel is, it's involuntary celibate. And one of the biggest communities for them was Reddit. And so some guy who considered himself an incel basically went on a rampage in Toronto and he killed quite a few people because he was angry at women. So that's like the downside of community, right? Where you're lonely and you go in the wrong direction. With that said, the internet does have a lot of really positive communities. It has amazing places where you don't feel alone, you don't feel crazy, you can hang out with people of your own thoughts. So using Reddit as an example, I'll be in Reddit Fitness and we can talk about lifting weights. I'll be in Reddit NBA. We can talk about the NBA. And I'll be Reddit Canada Politics, right? We'll talk about the political situation in Canada, especially like in Ontario and whatnot. So I think the internet really helped me. With that said, the last part, I think our personality traits also matter a lot. I am pretty, going back to the independence thing, I'm mostly actually a loner. I like reading books. I like just hanging out. This is going to sound a little bit self-indulgent, but I am in constant wonderment of the world. So if you just sit me in a park, I'll be amazed by the clouds. I'll be amazed by the sun. I'll be amazed by the grass. So thankfully, I don't know, maybe because it was I traveled so much and language barriers and all that problems, but thankfully I can always kind of see the beauty in everything. So it was never that lonely for me for all those years.
Like, you're used to being intrigued and taking in information and interest from your environment. So you kind of walk around the world with your eyes wide open, always taking in what's around you.
Yeah, I mean, to mention him slightly disgraced now, but Louis C.K. had that great bit when he was on, I don't know, Conan O'Brien or whatever, and he's like, we're in an airplane, we're in this sardine tin can, we're flying above the earth. It's crazy. So maybe because all my relatives are still basically in Pakistan and India, and when I say that, I don't mean in any kind of like rich lifestyle, and some of them are in pretty non-rich lifestyles, but there's this wonderment where everything, where I'm walking down the street, and I'm like, oh my God, there's a 10-story building. I still remember this, like 15 years ago, maybe 20 now, the first like escalator opened up in a mall in Islamabad, which is the capital of Pakistan, and like people were losing their mind. And I'm sitting there as a kid. And first, you know, you're like, haha, they're so stupid. They think escalators are cool. What idiots. And then you're like, shit, they've never seen an escalator. An escalator is an amazing thing the first time you see it. You don't have to go up the stairs. It's taking you up for you. So it's like that kind of like maybe wonderment is just stuck in my head where I'm like, shit. Like yesterday or last weekend, I was just hanging out in my backyard. I was with my lady. We live in downtown Toronto. We have a 4-bedroom house. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like if you told me 15, 20 years ago, this was going to be my life, I'm like, this is impossible. So I think it's just sometimes people, and I don't want to like project on others, but sometimes there's this like that rat race kind of mentality or like what's someone else doing. Whereas I guess my comparison is all those relatives. And I'm just always like, holy shit, life is amazing. Which I think, and you've met me, you know this. Like I'm just like, this is crazy. Like you're giving me a drink and this is crazy. And like you're making me ice cubes and yada, yada. I'm always bewildered in a good way by how far technology has taken us. So going back to the original thing, I think that is what kind of kept me from feeling too lonely, was just like, this is kind of phenomenal. Everything around us is phenomenal.
How did you first discover the internet? Speaking of phenomenal things.
Internet. So I'd heard of the internet, obviously, because I'm a comp engineer. I'm a huge nerd. So even in Saudi Arabia, I knew of the internet, but I had no access to the internet. So I still remember the first time I had access to the internet was in 1997 when we came to Houston. I went to my brother's place and we went on and he like showed me how dial-up worked. That's when 56K was just about to come out. And I remember just going to Yahoo and he's like, whatever you want to find, you can look for it. And being a nerd, I looked for QBasic programming, but that was my first experience with the internet.
And how'd you make your first dollar online?
How did I make my first dollar? So this is way before even AdSense or any of those came out. So Commission Junction, CJ.com, was the largest like affiliate network. And it was in online gaming. I think someone bought some game. Like CJ had, I think, GameStop or whichever was the largest, because Amazon wasn't like as big at that time, relatively. I think it was GameStop that someone bought a video game through my website. And I was like, oh my God, I've been given a percentage of this money by someone else. With that said, I was just like making dinky dollars. I didn't really understand like targeting or really getting to your audience. And some guy came to me and he's like, hey, I'll pay you $300 a month if you put this ad on your website. I'll be like, $300? Like, at that age, I was like, holy shit, Mabala. And then afterwards, he said, hey, you know what? I'll also give you 10% commission. And I was like, shit. Like, I was making a little bit of money, right? But I was like, maybe he'll make like $100. And then he'll be like, ah, I'm good. I don't want to have ads anymore. So I tried to convince him not to. But he's like, he was like insistent. And I think we made, in terms of commission, so 10%, I think we made like $500 over the course of the next month. And that's kind of where I really opened up my eyes on like how much targeted ads mean, how much like the CTA matters. For those who don't know, that's call to action. Stuff like that where it really lines up with what your audience is looking for, at which point, if it's solving the problem, going back to that, they will pay you money to make their life easier. So that's how I made my first money. Monies.
Monies. My son calls it monies. Is that the thing that people are doing, the monies?
I don't know. I feel like I'm old enough that it's just words are getting jumbled in my head and they're just coming out as gibberish. And occasionally I hit something that makes it sound like I'm hip. And the fact that I just said I'm hip lets you know that I'm more closer towards needing a hip replacement than actually being hip.
Have to make a declarative statement about your hip status, then you've probably passed over.
Alas, such is life.
So money. You came from a family that sounds like had definitely some successful members in your family, but some members of your family really maybe struggling financially or not coming from a place of necessarily a lot of wealth. And now, you know, you've built up your own nest egg, your own little pile of monies, so to speak. How does that feel for you to have come from one level of wealth and success and to have made that jump?
Yeah. So I started talking about entrepreneurship about 2, maybe 3 years ago. And what happened was I've been on Reddit, and I swear this will tie it. I've been on Reddit for now 12, 13 years. And Examine.com, which is my nutrition company, is big with them because, you know, it's all research and they're big nerds there. So someone on Reddit tweeted a journalist and she said, you need to write about the Examine.com story. And this journalist and I, we ended up chatting. And she wrote about me in Forbes. And after she wrote about it, Tim Ferriss shared it. And he said, this man is living the 4-hour work week. And as you can imagine, that was like the stamp of approval to his horde. So all these people started contacting me and say, hey, will you be my mentor? Will you coach? Will you consult? And I'm like, I don't do any consulting. I don't do any mentorship. Like, I don't, like, I just try to keep my life as simple as possible.
You pretty much don't like people.
In general, yeah. Like, I want to be able to chat and hang out with people. But the moment I have responsibility with other human beings, I'm like, yikes. I can barely manage my girlfriend. I can't even, or my dog. I can't even imagine other humans. But, and obviously beyond the employees. But regardless. But what I realized was, you know, most people who quote unquote teach entrepreneurship are full of garbage, right? It's like you learn something on Monday, you try it out on Tuesday, and you're teaching it out on Wednesday. And that's not how life and real experience and coaching works. So I realized there needed to be someone, or not someone as in specifically one person, but there needed to be people going out there talking about the realities of entrepreneurship, right? It's so trendy right now to be an entrepreneur. It's so cool to be a digital nomad. Thankfully, I did the nomad thing like in 2005. I lived in Argentina and whatnot. So that's why I started talking about entrepreneurship. So when you talk about like me looking back at where I am today, especially relative to all my other family members and whatnot, there's a level of social responsibility for me, both honestly as an immigrant, in a very weird undercurrent way, and I don't really talk about it much, I was actually pretty devout Muslim, and I'm not a Muslim now, but even kind of like the misconceptions around Islam, if you wish, and as someone being like, this is the reality of entrepreneurship. So that's kind of why I got into SGO. That's why I started doing like these charity food offs and whatnot, where people usually leverage their relationships and their internet fame or whatever you want to call it for more internet fame or more money and whatnot, which is fine, which is cool. If that's, if that's what motivates you, awesome. For me, I'm much more interested in like, what can we do that's ridiculous, but also help others. Also make a positive impact in the sense that, and again, this sounds very self-indulgent, where people are essentially inspired by what you do. At my rate right now, I'm getting maybe one or two emails a day being like, hey, you know, you've changed this, you've inspired me, yada, yada. And it's great, but the idea isn't for my own ego, which, as you know, is just ginormous. Like, my ego is massive. It's a hot air balloon. But it's more like, okay, maybe if I'm doing something that's not all about me, 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 other people might be like, hey, there's some satisfaction in trying to help others too. So, you know, when I talk about being an immigrant, a lot of that to me is one, 90% of my success is because I came to the West. Let's be honest. Like, I may have worked hard, but working hard is just like the baseline condition to be successful. You want to see working hard, like go to India, go to Philippines, you'll see hard work. But there's also opportunity. There's also education, right? Like I said, hanging out with successful people, so many times I've been hanging out with really intelligent, really successful people, and they'll say something that's almost like offhand or flippant to them. When I hear it, I was like, damn, this is big. And I'm very thankful that I've been in the same position, that I've said something just like, whatever. And someone else like, yo, this like changed my life, or this made a huge impact. One of the most random ones, I was in Osaka, Japan, of all the places in the world, at a Starbucks with my buddy there. And this guy comes up to me, this like white dude, and he's like, oh my God, it's Saul Orwell. And I thought my buddy was just getting my leg pulled, but no, he was a fan of SJO. And, you know, it was very awkward for everyone involved because I was not expecting it in Japan. But he emailed me like a few in the next day, and he's like, hey, I forgot to mention, I was with my wife, who's Japanese, which is why I was in Japan. And we both started walking because you said you started walking to lose your weight. And since then, I've lost 20 pounds and I've started getting my other friends walking. And I was like, this is amazing. like, I'd never even heard of this guy before. And my one little thing about like, hey, I walked 10,000 steps a day, and then all the other stuff happened. So sorry, long kind of version answer to what you're saying. But to me, a lot of it is giving back. A lot of it is like, hey, you know, maybe I don't need to change the world. There's these people like, oh, I'm going to make a million entrepreneurs and all that kind of garbage. I'm more just like, hey, I'll make a little dent. And I hope that dent stays and ideally makes a larger dent. So that's my immigrant background.
Has there been a shadow side to your success? Like, are there things about yourself that have changed that you're not always happy with?
I have been very, 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 very careful to keep my ego in check. So, like, the friends I hang out with on the daily, pretty much none of them, like, a lot of the entrepreneurs I know, they'll tend to start hanging out with only other entrepreneurs because the idea is they get my ambition, they get what I'm going through and all that kind of stuff. And that's important. And I do definitely hang out with some like entrepreneurial friends that are tight, but I've definitely kept my non-entrepreneurial friends because they will bust my balls like no one else will, right? They may see a modicum of my success or e-fame or whatever, but to them, I'm still the same idiot who changed his name, whatever, 9 years ago. So I've definitely seen with some of my friends where your ego can become a little bit larger. Your expectations of what other people should be doing towards you become larger.
Like entitlement, you mean?
Yeah, there's definitely a level of entitlement, but it's also like, okay, so we might get into this, but I do these charity food offs. And the last one I did in Toronto, we raised 10,000. Canadian. And the one I did in New York, we raised about 40,000. And after the one I did in New York, I was exhausted. I put it all together in 2 months. I didn't have like a network. I had to build it all up. And so Seth Godin came to me, and Mark Manson, who wrote The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is the number one bestseller last year. So people saw these pictures and all these people started like inundating me, oh, you know, trying to be my friends. And obviously like you can smell that from a mile away. So my inbox was clogged. And so the charity I supported in Toronto, it's called Community Food Centers of Canada. They talk about like food sustainability and whatnot. And so one of their directors emailed me and she's like, hey, you know, how tied are you into the cookie thing? And that makes sense, right? They're talking about food sustainability and here I am doing this event with 100 pounds of cookies. It's ridiculous. But because I had so many emails and I was so exhausted, I wrote this like quick little, almost pithy email being like, I love cookies. People love cookies. It's going to be cookies. And immediately they all like emailed me being like, hey, we didn't mean to push you. We didn't mean to like dictate what you're trying to do. And I felt really, really uncomfortable. Because the reality is now that I can raise a decent chunk of change, I essentially have influence over these organizations, right? I can start, like if my ego wanted to, I could start being like, hey, I'm giving you so much money. What are you doing for me? Or why am I not in this article or stuff like that? So in my upcoming one where we should hit 75,000, I actually made it so that the max we give to each charity is 25,000. And my logic was if next year I don't do it or something happens, a charity can come back from a 25K deficit. Like they can raise 10K, they can raise 5K, they can figure it out. But if I suddenly go from 75K to zero, they're in trouble. And like that might be great for my ego where they put me as a gold sponsor, stuff like that. But that's like one of those cases where you have to take a step back and you're like, is this going in a direction I like? Right? If we raise it.
It's not sustainable for them.
It's not even sustainable. It's like it changes the relationship. Right? If someone's giving you $5 and they're kind of a jerk to you, like, whatever, get out. But if someone's giving you $100,000 and they're kind of being like, and not to say you've ever had to face this, but we talk about sexism, right? We talk about even like Harvey Weinstein. Like, they had to kind of grin and bear it because he was such a powerful influence that they couldn't do anything about it. Right? His ego was right. So massive.
Well, it sounds like you're trying to be very mindful of using your power well and using it in a way that's responsible, but also keeps yourself in check.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, and here's the thing. It might be possible if I gave them 75K, I'd be like, hey, I want my face on this website or my name. Like, and I'm not saying I would, but I might. You never know, right?
You might want to. And that's, exactly. You have to tell the truth about that. I mean, I think that's when you don't recognize that in yourself is when you enter the danger zone, so to speak, where you're vulnerable to abusing your power without realizing that you are. So you have to tell the truth about like, hey, we all have an ego. We all have things that we want and we desire and...
For sure. So I think it's like super important to surround yourself with people who don't care for what you've done, who will, like I said, bust your balls. With that said, like it's something you need to be very, very cognizant of that you don't, you know, start abusing it, even though you're not trying to do it on purpose. It's just something you start doing.
What do you most love to write about right now?
What do I most like to write about? There's a level of outrage always in almost everything I'm doing or everything that's in my mind. Okay, so kind of even going back to the previous question, I've created a policy page where I say, hey, by policy, and for the record, if you use the word policy, everyone somehow takes you more seriously. But this policy page basically says, like, don't send me anything. I don't want anything. Here's my address because you're going to ask me anyway. But by policy, I don't accept anything. So it goes back to even that. Like, you have to set these boundaries for yourself to make sure you don't get lost thinking you're bigger and better than you actually are. So going back to that policy page, the big thing is, like, it affords me that independence. So I like writing about things that are important to me that are almost contrarian, but not for the sake of being contrarian. So, like, the last thing I wrote about was quitting. And there's, you know, people talk about, like, hey, failing's okay, but no one really talks about how quitting is okay. And the example I gave was, I was at an event and I was speaking, and a few of us were on this, like, entrepreneur panel. And this guy was like, hey, I've been doing this thing for 9 years and it hasn't worked out. And, like, you know, I feel very burned out. And the other two, and not to say it's because of this, but they were definitely much younger. And they're like, you should stick with it. You should keep at it. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? You've been doing this for 9 years. Like, quit. Move on to the next thing. And there's this weird concept that quitting means you failed in a bad way. But there's giving up, which is when you have no choice, or and you just can't, you're like, ugh, I can't do this. And quitting, which is like, I could proceed if I wanted, or I could be like, this is no longer aligned with my time, right? The opportunity cost is too high. So going back to kind of like what I like writing about, it's stuff that's bubbling in my head that isn't sexy, right? That isn't cool. Talking about survivorship bias and how Tony Robbins is full of garbage. The rags to riches BS that everyone sells, right? One of the latest ones is Squarespace. So Anthony, I think is his name. And again, disclaimer, I couldn't do what he did. I'm not saying he had it easy or he didn't work hard for it. But you read through his story and they're like, oh, rags to riches. He didn't start with anything except for the fact that his dad gave him $30,000 and he got a grant from the government of Maryland for $20,000. Like, I'm sorry, but starting off with $50,000 versus not starting off with anything is a whole different ballgame. So it's that kind of stuff where I can point out and be like, this is outrageous. And no one thinks, hey, this guy's trying to sell me a book, or hey, this guy's just jealous. It's that almost cloak that I have that because I'm not trying to sell you anything, I can just be honest about whatever is bugging me about the stories of entrepreneurship.
And are you not trying to sell because you have enough money? Like, you're set, you're done?
I don't want to sell because there's responsibility. Like, I have a decent amount of money. I am in no way struggling. But the moment you try to sell something, or the moment you do sell something, sorry, you have responsibility. You have responsibility of output. You have a responsibility of customer service. There's a level of expectation. Right now, I do what I want. If I don't want to answer emails, screw you. I don't have to answer emails. I don't have to think about, ooh, this guy might buy my book, or, you know, like the do things that don't scale kind of things. I do it because I want to do it.
So you get the freedom to be a critical voice or a mischief maker. You get to be contrarian because you're not on the hook. You don't have the responsibility to please customers or make customers happy.
Exactly. There's like, and the other side of the customer thing is also then you do joint ventures, you do affiliate deals, and there's all this quid pro quo stuff. So for me, it's like, for example, if I don't want to write for the next 2 months, I don't have to write. So some people might be like, hey, you know, you haven't written anything, but there's no financial expectation. Right? There's no like, hey, you're selling this book, or hey, you're becoming a quote unquote thought leader. Or, hey, you want to speak at this event. You need to be writing. My output, my production is solely based on what I want. And as an example of that is like events. I don't go to any events. I don't really do podcasts like we earlier talked about, but I do this because I want to. I don't need to build my brand out. Going to events, it's summertime in Toronto is so short, but so amazing that I don't go anywhere during the summertime because it's the only time we have. And if I had a business, I'm like, oh, I got to go speak at this event. I got to do this webinar and all that kind of stuff. Right now, I'm doing this because I want to for no other reason.
What's next for you?
So, like, some people have this strategic big plan and whatnot. Just to give you a sense of, you know, people, especially people who haven't heard of me previously, there's this connection between chocolate chip cookies and I. And a lot of people thought it was some kind of like master branding of mine. But really, it was just something I really loved. And I talked about it a lot. And I convinced someone to send me, or I did this chocolate chip cookie off a few years ago. And then people started saying, hey, I can make better cookies. And I was like, all right, send me cookies. So I had over 200 people send me cookies in the mail. And people would be like, man, this was a genius idea. You were doing this and you set it up beautifully. I'm like, and I just look at them like they're crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? This was never meant to be anything more than me just running my mouth. And a big part of me running my mouth is this going to take me possibly somewhere interesting? If yes, awesome. If not, that's okay. I think I told you this previously, like my favorite kinds of books are biographies. And the question I'm always asking myself is, would I read my own memoirs, right? Am I writing an interesting chapter in my life? And so the moment, like there is a level of, let's say, overarching goals, but I don't really have any on the personal side. I have things like I want to do. I want to experience zero gravity. You know, I want to climb tallest mountain in South America, all that kind of stuff. But on like a professional sense, I'm very vague and open. To give you a sense of it, I bought, so I've been, like, the next area I do want to get into is the pet space. So I bought the domain pet.org a couple of years ago, but I haven't felt the itch yet. So I haven't done it. And it might be that I'll never feel the itch and I'll never do it. And that's okay. But I've made that option available to me, right? I don't know if you've read about optionality and whatnot, but I'm big on, I will do things when I want to do them and if I'm interested by them, but I don't really have a plan. I was in People magazine earlier this year. And the only reason I was in it was because it's crazy. The only reason was so I can give it to my mom and be like, Mom, I was in People magazine. And going back to our earlier discussion, she can then tell her friends and all that kind of stuff. But it was just ridiculous.
She'll forgive you for the tattoo all over again.
Exactly. She's like, look, there's my son and you can see his tattoo. But it was just one of those things where it was like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to make it happen. Now, if I had another chance to get into People magazine, I'm like, meh, I've already done it, bored. I don't need the fame or whatever. So sorry, like when you ask what's next for me, I don't really know, but it's definitely something that would hopefully be somehow involved in shenanigans or ridiculousness or muckraking or some kind of other synonym for those words that I just used.
I'm always intrigued by how people answer that question because I think people often assume that that means like goals or next business ideas. And I think sometimes this can be just like, what do I want to learn about? What kinds of experiences do I want to have? Like you did mention some of those. Like,
that is a great point. So I am big into classes. I take classes all the time. One of the next one I'll be taking is butchering. I've done everything from woodworking to wood carving to extreme wilderness camping to glaciers and all that kind of stuff. So I think one of the next ones I was actually going to do was my buddy UJ. He co-founded the 5-Minute Journal. There's this book called Drawing with the Right Side of Your Brain. And the idea is that it helps you, whatever, more creative drawing, whatnot. But she has a week-long course. And you go, and it's from 9 to 5, and you draw your face the first day, and you draw your face at the end of the day. And the before and afters are spectacular. And I've never had a, let's say, artistic side in terms of like drawing or painting or anything like that. But Eugene and I have been definitely talking about going to that. Just not even a week ago, I was rally racing. So I'm very, very interested in learning interesting and new things. And whatever comes across in front of me, I usually, if it's of any kind of intrigue to me, I'll be like, let's do it. So let's say butchering for right now and drawing better are next for me.
Awesome. Love it. I love that book, actually, Drawing from the Right Side of Your Brain. It's a fantastic book.
I quoted it right. It's super interesting, right? And like, it's also like, it's one of those things where books are great sometimes to read and get a bit of theoretical knowledge, but we're pretty, pretty poor at actually applying it in a practical manner. So actually going somewhere and spending 1 week and 9 to 5 going in and focusing on it, I think that'll be a lot of fun. And I'm actually really, really excited to get that going.
And doing it with a buddy, like doing it with a sense of community is of course the best way to do anything.
Exactly. Right. And then like, and the other thing is, so I actually recently wrote about this for failure. One great thing about your buddies is if you fail and you make it a joke with them, it's a great, and I'm not saying this from like a utilitarian perspective. I'm just saying it from a truism. It's a great bonding experience, right? If you're just like, let's say if I'm a horrible drawer at the end of the day and UJ is a great one, it still becomes a joke that he got better and I got nowhere. So I love that bonding part of both our successes and our failures. Like it's easy to laugh about our failures, you know, 6 months later, a year later and be like, oh, that was bad, but that was hilarious. But I love doing it in the middle of it. We're like, this is ridiculous. Let's own and embrace how foolish this was.
My husband had an artistic moment and he, painted a picture for me and gave it to me. This was years ago after a trip to Europe. And I looked at it. I was like, this is so great. Thank you. You've painted me a pair of boots. And he was like, no, that's a picture of us. And I was like, oh, well, good thing. I love you anyway.
Well, I mean, I guess it speaks to what you were seeing in art, right? Isn't art in the eye of the beholder or something like that? So it was you just saw the beauty that he created that matched to your beauty. So something like that. I think we could save it. I think we're going to save it.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay. I like shoes anyway. It's good.
It worked out for everybody.
So if people are intrigued and want to follow along with what you're doing, whether it's nutrition or cookies or mischief making, what's the best place for people to stalk you online?
Giddy up. So I have the domain sjo.com. You can find me on that. You can find me. I'm pretty active on Facebook. And when I say active on Facebook, this would be, I guess, one of my last things is, to me, social media is a great way to be a human. And what I mean by that is I always make fun of the people who use, so I'm not on Instagram, for example, but who use Instagram or Facebook to be like, look how amazing my life is. And look how brilliant I am. And look how great this is. And look how great that is. I think social media is a great, great place to be like, look, I have some success, but I'm also an idiot at the same time, or vice versa. I'm an idiot. I have a bit of success. And it's a great place to let your opinions run. Just be yourself. So via SEO, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter, but don't expect any kind of like deep knowledge, or maybe occasionally, or something quasi deep. But mostly it's just me talking about the world and kind of like how I interact with it. And the best part of it, and the reason I was mentioning this, is the interactions with other people who are reading this and their experiences and their ideas and thoughts and stuff is always very, very fascinating to me. And I'm very, very appreciative that this audience kind of contributes back to me with their knowledge and experience. So sjo.com.
You like the interactions. SJO after your fabulous middle name.
Yeah. So I don't even have, like, some people think it was a middle name, but I used to be in the domain name industry. So I just asked around. I'm like, listen, I want a 3-letter domain that's easy to remember. And SJO turned out to be available. So I picked it up. So yeah, it's pure happenstance and coincidence that the first and last letter align with my name. My ego's pretty big. But not partly why I actually did SEO.com instead of Saul Orwell or anything was because I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted it to be about the thoughts and ideas more than the individual behind it. And unfortunately, I f***ed it up, obviously, with most people thinking it is my initials.
Even though you, as I know, do not have a middle name.
Correct. Correct. It's one of those things like those unforeseen consequences, right? I was like, oh, cool. 3-letter domain. And everyone's like, oh, it's your name. And I'm like, ah, I made a mistake, but now I'm already.
It does help people remember.
It is definitely very easy to remember. But
it's a good anchor.
In retrospect, if I were like kro.com or something, it would have worked just as well. But alas.
Alas, here you are.
Yeah. Such a horrible life I've led. Oh my, oh my.
Go eat a cookie. You'll feel better.
Maybe I will.
Hey, I super appreciate you taking the time to do the interview and talk about some of your experiences and background and mischief making, and I know that it's going to be a very interesting conversation for my audience. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was an absolute blast for me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.